were together about 18 years. And, you know, I guess that stuff happens, you know. You learn to keep moving forward. It's just like, you know, part of your family dying, you know. It really is. But, you know, we got this thing here. It's called the Worldwide Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, he said a few things to me before, you know, time came. And he just told me not to be alone. You know, it's important. So for about 2 months I was. And then I, you know, I said, I got to pick myself up and, you know, if I want to be who I really am and I want the goodness to come out of me like I'd like to have come out of me, I got to get back on the train and, you know, start finding things to make me happy again. And then I ran into this person and I just asked him for his phone number one time and, you know, I called him. We kind of miscommunicated a little bit for a while there, but like one day we met again and we kind of leveled the ground a little bit. And that's the person I asked to speak tonight. And I actually forgot his home group already because my brain's kind of running a little crazy right now. So I'll let our speaker tell you all that stuff and everything. So I'll give you Mitch.
One of the things that I had to do before I came up was to make sure that A, my zipper was up and that there was no snot coming out of my nose. Years ago, there was a lady that was an important part of our fellowship. Her name was Dot T. And I remember Dot telling me one time years ago that sometimes people don't hear a word you're saying, but they look at you and they can tell by the way you look what kind of program you're working. Now, Dot, when she would speak, she would wear a dress. She'd be dressed to the nines. I just made sure my zipper was up. I'm an addict. My name's Mickey. And my home group is bigger on the inside Wednesday night and shady side. Starts at 7:30. And I'm a firm believer that my home group is the best home group in Narcotics Anonymous worldwide. If you don't think yours is the best home group in Narcotics Anonymous worldwide, you should probably get another home group. Because that's really where everything starts. It starts on the group level. I got some guys that are in my home group that were sitting there and we were watching, because that's what we do. We watch. We should anyway. And I didn't pay much attention to the quote-unquote old-timers with the 20-plus years, the 30-plus years. I'm happy for them. That's a great job. But what really gets me is the people that are picking up with 30 days or less. Get down into the 10 days, and I start shivering because I remember what 10 days feels like. It always reminds me of what we go through to get this. Look, the end of the road is a thoroughbred bitch. There ain't nothing like it. Nothing that I've ever experienced in my whole life worse than the end of the road. Because all the drama and all the muck and all of the disease and all of the crap and all of the lies and all of the desperation and all of the funk and all of the, you know, all the good stuff that drives our asses into our first meeting. It's still there after the first meeting. In some cases, it's still there after 30 meetings. Sometimes it's there after 60 meetings. Sometimes it might take a good year to get to a place where we are comfortable in our skin. Not well, but comfortable. I know for me that when I first got clean, and God, I was reminded today, I was sitting eating with some friends, and it was kind of funny to them. It was a little hurtful to me. I was talking about being at the World Convention in New York City in 1983, and Jimmy Kay, our founder, was the main speaker. And the girl that was sitting at the table said, "Shit, I wasn't even born yet." Now, I'm old, but I don't want to be reminded that I'm that damn old. I want to be a little bit young at heart. I want to live a little bit of a lie about it, you know. But the truth is, I've grown up in this program, in the literal sense. I've gotten old. I'm 60 years old, and when I got clean, I was 30, and I was out of my mind at 30. And there were 5 NA meetings. I'm from Pittsburgh, and at the time there were 5 NA meetings in the whole city, and I was told that I had to get 3 notes signed to get into detox, and I was trying to get into detox in a hurry. Probably unlike any of you, I want what I want when I want it. And I don't want anything to get in the way of that, but the reason I was in such a hurry then was because I was on parole and on a 2.5 to 5 suspended sentence. My whole life was on parole or probation until I got here. And if any of you have had that institutional drama and that's been in your life, or maybe you're still holding on to some of it, you come in here clean and you may still have a tail, so to speak, some backup time that you need to walk off, this is the place to do it. Because when I got clean, you know, when I stopped using, I stopped getting arrested. It was fucking amazing. I could never have put that together. Never. And after a couple of years of being here, I looked back and it was like, wow, I haven't been arrested. I don't have a police problem anymore. You know, turns out after years of inventories, I found out that I never had a police problem. I deserved everything that I ever got. And that's where grace comes in, because had it not been for grace, just grace. If it wasn't for grace, I'm not here. Because grace is about getting something that is unmerited. And my life to the point of grace, when I first recognized grace, my life up to that point certainly didn't deserve any merit of any sort. I mean, I was an idiot. I was an abusive, nasty, resentful, angry. I was what they say, getting and using and finding ways and means to get more without any conscience whatsoever. And I don't say that because I want to appear to be some tough guy or some street guy or some whatever, because today, for the most part, most people don't even recognize the fact. If they didn't know it, they wouldn't know it. I got a neighbor that lives across the street from me. He's a policeman, and he thinks I'm a great guy. Go figure. I could have never lived across the street from a cop without it being an issue. So, You know, I was that guy. I was born, and I don't say this for any other reason other than for the fact of what it is and the transformation of what I am. If you don't know what I was, then what I appear to be right now don't make no sense. I was born in a bottom. My life was always bottom. There was nothing exciting about my life till I got clean. I mean, I say that again. It's okay today. I'm glad that that's the way it was, because I really, really live in gratitude of who I am and what I am today based on what I was. Nobody cared about me. I was born into a crazy-ass situation with, you know, the disease all around me. By the time I was 11 years old, I was, forget about having already used, I was already getting sent away. And I lived in juvenile institutions until I was 17, 18 years old, and then it was time to go to penitentiaries. I grew up institutionalized. I grew up not feeling, not talking, not all of the things that we get to hear when we first get here that sound French or Japanese, okay, are the complete opposite of everything I was when I got here. I was a trained idiot. I was trained by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to be everything that I was. And when I got here because I was trying to pull a move. I had gotten arrested sitting in front of my car at 3:00 in the morning in front of Bill's Bar on Carson Street on the south side. That's where I'm from. Maybe I'm from Bill's Bar. I don't know. I've lived there a lot, but south side. With my little dome light on at 3:00 a.m. hooking something up so that I could get home. Think about that. It's 3 a.m. I'm still trying to get something in so I can go home. I'm that addict that can never stop using. From the moment I wake up until I pass out, it is on. I can't stop. Everybody else is done and I'm wondering why. And I got arrested because I was the only car in that block with the dome light on with some skinny guy humped over the steering wheel looking like he's doing something dumb. Cops came, pulled me out of the car and took me to jail. I got to jail that night, and the first time in my life ever that I went to jail, and I felt desperation. I felt hopeless. I wanted to hang up. I wanted to just die because I was 30 years old. I felt like I was 90. I had never accomplished anything. Everything was going through my mind in those few hours in that cell. And I couldn't live like this anymore. And I said, God, please help. I didn't realize at the time when I said, God, please help, because I had said it before. Anybody that's ever gone to court the next day, you know, if you got court, that night you say, God, please help. If you got any kind of sense at all, you're saying a prayer before you go to fucking court. Especially if you're in jail, going to court. Or if you're going in front of the parole board, you're asking God to help when you go in front of the parole board. Many a time, God was like Monty Hall. Let's make a deal. You help me, I help you. That night, I said that. I didn't realize when I said it that what was about to happen was going to be God's grace and God's mercy. The next morning, I should have been transferred because I was on parole. I should have had a hit on me right away. I should have had a detainer. I should have never got out, but I got out. They opened the gate and said, go. I didn't think about the fact that I said, God, please help. I thought, I need to get something in me so I can think about what I need to do. You ever need to get something in you so you can think about what the fuck you need to do? Now, if you're having any questions at all about what they're talking about in terms of the second step in insanity, if you needed to get something in you so you could think, you might have a little insane problem there. Just saying. Also, while I'm on that subject, if you got to get notes signed, if you got to come to a meeting and get a note signed, and you don't think you got a problem, please look at the note. You got a problem. They don't give notes to normal people to go to NA and get signed. You're fucked up. Get the note signed and try to learn how to surrender. Just saying. You don't have to pay attention to me. I'm just saying it. That's all. So I got a little bit of something, and I started trying to think of what the best thing for me to do, and I fought my way right into NA. And I didn't know anything about NA. I thought if I could get committed, then maybe my parole officer would cut me a little bit of a break. You know, one of them sympathy deals. I don't know, again, about you guys. I might be different. I don't know. But I've done a lot of sympathy detoxes. That's when I run the detox hoping that you'll let me back in the house. Right? I'm trying. I'm telling you, this time I'm for real. Please, let me come home. I'm in detox. You have to believe me this time. Well, I thought it would work on the parole officer, and so I went home and made some phone calls, and the short version of a long story is that they told me after an over-the-phone evaluation that I was a drug addict. It took them about half an hour to come up with what I knew as soon as we started talking. And I was so desperate to get not go to jail, not to get clean. I was desperate to not go to jail, not go to the penitentiary. I was desperate to beat the system. I wasn't desperate enough to get clean. Although, again, I'm in that situation. Something's really wrong. I really need help. I really need to change. But I don't know that. I just know I got to try to get out of this jam I'm in. They tell me because I'm a drug addict, I got to get 3 notes signed at 3 NA meetings, and there's only 5 of them a week. So I panic. I figure out what I got to do. I go to my first NA meeting, and I'm slammed because I don't know you're supposed to come here clean. Nobody said show up clean. They just said it was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I thought, narcotics. I'll fit right in. So I went pretty high, and they told me, I said, I'm just here, you know, they typical, at the door, want to hug. I'm not hugging you. I just want to get the notes signed. Who signs the notes? And they told me that the person that was up at the podium signed the notes, and when they were done talking, they would sign my note. In the meantime, sit down over there. We'll bring you some coffee. All right. So I sit down over there, and they bring me some coffee. And now, all along now, I'm telling you, I forgot that I said, God, please help. That wasn't even in my mind anymore. So I'm sitting at this table, and all of a sudden I got overwhelmed with emotion. Now, I haven't felt any emotion up to this point for a long, long time, except for the couple of nights before when I was sitting in the cell and I was thinking for the first time ever in my life about killing my sorry ass. But I'm sitting at this table, I'm in this church basement, and I can't hear anything that's going on. I'm in la-la land, but I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, again, my life, and it dawns on me, and I'm in church basement, and I'm a nothing, I'm a zero. It's like, Jesus, God, please. And I get up, because I feel myself about to burst into tears. And there's no way that I'm letting any of these guys from Brookline see Mick Harvey from Southside crying crying in a fucking church basement. So I get up because I'm filled with anger and rage and resentment and pride and ego, which I shouldn't have had because I had nothing to be proud of. And I certainly didn't have anything to have an ego about, but I had it. And I was getting out of there and I ran to the door, ran through the door, and shit, I ran into the back of the basement. I didn't make it out the door. And a guy that was sitting at the table followed me. And this is what we do. If we don't do nothing else, this is what we do. He broke through all that. I was an angry young dude. I had a snarl a mile long. I looked like evil. And he was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, willing to take a risk and break through all that bullshit that I looked like and hug me in my tears, in my anger, and tell me, welcome home. Never forgot it. I couldn't get clean that night, obviously. I couldn't get clean the next day. I went to detox, and of course I magnetized right to the only other fool that was in detox, and we retoxed. But again, that's what we do. I didn't know any better. And one of the other guys that was at that meeting came up to that detox while I was there and brought me a sandwich. Now, they're feeding us. I don't understand what's going on with the sandwich. Again, my whole life has been filled with self-centeredness and protecting myself. And, you know, what's his game? Why is he bringing me a sandwich? What's up with this? What do you want? Nothing. Just wanted to know that we were thinking about you. What do you mean we're thinking about you? We at the meeting up in Brookline, we were thinking about you. Why? Well, we need members. I said, what? Yeah, we need members. And you'll make a good one. Here's my number. When they tell you you're leaving, don't leave. Call me. I'll come pick you up. I said, you got a car? He said, I got a car. I said, I'm calling. Because I didn't have a car. And I didn't want to try to take a bus from one end of town to the other. So a car sounded cool to me. I'll call you just because of that. So Chucky picked me up. And Chucky babysat me for... Now mind you, the day I got out of detox was the first day that I was clean. And Chucky knew that, and Chucky stayed around me, and I shivered and shook and shit and everything we do, sick. And I did that, and again, this is just me. I don't want to offend anybody. I love everybody in this room to some degree. I just love the fact that you're here. I love the fact that you're a member or trying to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. That's enough for me. But I detoxed shit all over myself, puking, legs shaking, cramping up for a week and a half after detox, 2 weeks, couldn't sleep for a month. I did all that without methadone or Suboxone. Maybe it was a different time. I don't know. All I know is that I heard them say that we're a program of complete abstinence. Complete. And somehow that worked for me and hundreds of other people. I don't know what happened, but keep that in mind. The clean is clean and everything else ain't. And clean is so good. There is nothing better than clean. Nothing. I don't give a shit if the drama in your life is piled up over your head. It's still better than that. I'd still rather go through all the funk that comes my way clean than go through it, the same funk, doing that. This is better than that. Always. Always. So I got clean. I stayed clean. I got lucky. I got clean when NA was real small and they will allow egomaniacs like myself to be involved. So I got involved because I could voice myself, I could talk shit, I could bully, I could get things done, and I was with 10, 12 other guys that did the same damn thing. And we got involved in the tri-state region, and we had the first tri-state convention and the first tri-state retreat and the first this and the first that, and we had no fucking clue what we were doing. And today they're getting ready to have the 30th one. So again, a reminder of who's really running shit. It wasn't us. We might have thought we were, but it wasn't. And I stayed clean, and I helped people, and I got involved down at the Western Penitentiary when the first time they let guys come in from N.A. They had had the other fellowship there for years. N.A. back in those days wasn't recognized as a valuable resource in getting clean. They would tell people back then, believe this or not, if you don't go to... You will get high. You will get high if you don't go to... And fuck addicts like me were saying, fuck that, I'll show you. Get clean on spike. Tell me I can't do something. Watch what happens. But see, God is good. Right? Because who knew? Who knew? So for 3 or 4 years, 5 years, things are going good. I'm sponsoring people. I'm being sponsored. I'm active. I got this groove on with Narcotics Anonymous. But I got this hole in my gut. And I've had this hole in my gut my whole life. Prior to N.A., I was filling that hole with cocaine and alcohol and heroin and anything I could get, as much as I could get of it, because to not have something in that hole was unbearable. I don't know if you can relate to the hole in the gut where life sucks. Where you look in the mirror and you're too this or you're too that, and none of it's good. Where you can't look people in the eye, when you know when you lay down at night that you're a fraud. That you've never amounted to anything and you never will. That you have zero self-esteem and zero self-worth. I don't know if you guys experienced that, but that was my life. And drugs took that away. And I got clean and I had no drugs anymore, and it was there and it was screaming at me every fucking day. Do something. So I would do women. I don't know if any of you guys can relate. I don't know. But I did women. And this was a great place to do women. Because women had the same hole in their guts and they wanted to do guys. It beat all them damn discos of the 70s. But as soon as it was over, the hole was still there. I earned money. I started being an earner. I don't know how that happened either, but, you know, I forgot that in February of 1982, I said, God, please help. Just that one time, I said, God, please help. So all of a sudden, I'm making money like I never, legitimately, I'm making legitimate money. I never had a nickel that I didn't steal or flip something for. It came fast. It went fast. Every day I was on the hunt. You know that hunt. Every day it was a hunt. But now all of a sudden I was getting paid on Friday like other people. And Friday, as soon as I got paid, I'd go to the mall. Because damn it, Saturday there was a N.A. dance. And you got to look good at the N.A. dance. You got to get a new outfit. You got to get some new shirts or some new pants. Fucking new tennis shoes every goddamn 2 weeks. Because if they got a smear on them, they ain't new no more. And if they saw you in that outfit last week, it ain't worth a shit this week. Because you're filling the hole. I'm filling the hole. And when I get to the NA dance or the NA meeting and I'm looking good, and somebody steps up to me and says, Mick, you look good. Damn, Mick, you're looking good. God damn, Mick. It's filled the hole. I relied on that to get through the day. I relied on what your opinion was, and I needed a good one from you, because I hated myself. I couldn't get well fast enough. And I had no clue that the overspending. Shit, it got to the point where one time I bought a fucking brand new Lincoln. 2 months later, I got this big ass payment and I hate it. But for 2 months, I looked good in the Lincoln. I don't really know if anybody in this room relates to that type of stuff. But it's kind of like swimming upstream. I couldn't get anywhere. My back was always against the wall, because the longer I stayed clean, the more I realized that I was living in defect. And I didn't know how to get out of defect, because if I stopped getting out of defect, the pain was overwhelming. I'm telling you, the pain of being me without any kind of filling, something to fill me up, was just too much for me. 1989, I got, and prior to that, I had started getting asked to speak at conventions around the country. And in 1989, I was asked to speak at the World Convention in Orlando. I was one of the five main speakers. And I went down to Orlando, and about 2 months before I went, I knew I was in trouble. The letter that I got from the WSO, the World Service Office at the time, neatly typed, you know, congratulating me and thanking me for being so gracious to be a world speaker. And I got that letter and I said, shit, if they only knew. If they only knew what was really going on with me on the inside. That letter was the first evidence that I had gotten that proved that my insides did not match my outsides, and that I was in trouble. And I did not know how to get out of it. And I had a God, and I prayed, and I had a sponsor, and he would tell me, you need to stop this and stop that. And I'd say, sounds like a great idea. And that was always because when he was telling me that, my ass cheeks were in the corner. I was in desperation. I didn't want to get high. So he'd say, do this, do that. And I'd say, great idea. And I'd do it for a minute. And then the emptiness would overwhelm me, and the fear and the pain. And I would go out and I would hook up. Something to fix me. Not a drug, but something. I come back from that convention in September of 1989, and in January of 1990, after 8 years clean, I was shooting cocaine. That's my story. I was sitting in a house with some guys that still were out there. 8 years later, they saw me and said, where you been? Like it was fucking a week. It was 8 years. I walked into this bar on the south side, and everybody that I knew that was still out there was still at the bar sitting in the same damn stools. And they looked, they said, yo, Mick, where you been, buddy? It's been 8 years. Not 8 days. But they were doing the same old thing, and it didn't take long for me to be jumped in doing the same old thing. And I'm sitting in this house with two other guys, and I got a big pile of coke, because I went out, right, I went out with a bunch of money. And I got this big ass pile of cocaine, and I'm sitting there, and we got one set of works, and we're flushing that one ass set of works. Because I, you know, I don't know if you've ever shot cocaine. I know a lot of you have smoked cocaine. I can tell you that shooting cocaine is the same deal as smoking it. You can't stop. There's never enough. There's no fucking stop. The only difference between smoking and shooting is shooting hurts. Hour or two of shooting cocaine, your arms are begging for relief. Especially with one blunt set of works that we're flushing with Clorox, but God forbid one of us end up with AIDS. Shooting cocaine, worried about AIDS. Again, second step insanity shit, you know what I mean? It gets better. So we're flushing it out, and by I don't know when, because who knows? I don't know how long I was shooting cocaine that morning or afternoon. I don't even know if it was morning, afternoon, or evening. I don't know. I just remember we were shooting a lot of cocaine, and everything was going wah, 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 and the hair on the back of my fucking neck was standing up, and I couldn't wait for the trick to get to me so that I could do some more, and the son of a bitch next to me would stand up and clutch his fucking heart, and I'd be screaming, "Don't go out here, you'll fuck up our eyes." And 2 seconds later, I'd be saying, "How much do you do?" And I got this spit filled with cocaine, and I look at it and I think, fuck, is this coke or Clorox? I don't know, because we've been flushing Clorox water and coke. And I'm confused. I'm so high, I'm confused. So I say, is this Clorox or coke? And one of the idiots I was with says, "I don't know, give it to me." Fuck you. So I do what I do, and I slam it in, and obviously it was cocaine. It took me 5 years to want to get clean. I didn't try to get clean. I went on the lam from Narcotics Anonymous for 5 years. I'd see you guys in the store or somewhere. I'd hide. I don't want to. And if you did catch up with me, "How you doing, Mick?" I'd say, "I'm doing great. I'm going to now." And they'd go, "Wow, Mick's going to..." I didn't want to ever get clean again. I lost the desire to stay clean. I was cool with just getting loaded until whatever. I didn't care. I felt like I gave it what I had for 8 years, and I ended up using again. So apparently it works for a lot of people. I'm just too messed up. It don't work for me. And 5 years into it, I almost died. I was in bed. I woke up in a puddle of my own blood. I was throwing up blood. I had decided that if I could stop shooting coke and doing narcotics, that I could become sociably acceptable, and I could just drink. And so I drank. The problem is I drink like I'm shooting cocaine. There's no stop, ever. So the alcohol was literally killing me, eating my insides out, and I threw up some blood, and I got up in the morning. I thought my wife had beat me up in the middle of the night in a blackout, like she had had enough and just pounded the living shit out of me, because I had all this blood, and I went into the mirror, and there was no marks, and I was like, "Fuck, happened?" I thought it was the hot sausage I was eating. But we get these moments, I think, that we get this moment of clarity in the midst of all of the crap. There's like this little tiny window of opportunity that happens. That's what happened to me. I kept forgetting that I had said, "God, please help," in February of 1982. And it's now February of 1995. And I forgot that I'd said, "God, please help."
and how what that meant. And I had this moment where my wife was holding our brand new baby and told me, and I'd heard this shit before, only would it be in an argument, it would be, you know, condescending, like I didn't deserve it, some shit. But she said to me in a real calm, normal voice that she had never known anybody that was okay with dying so that they could use. Like, you're okay to die. And I said, yes. And she said, but your daughter, and she was a baby, 3 months old, 4 months, whatever, she's going to grow up without a dad. And I don't know why that moment, that window, that was the thing that hit me in the chest, but it did. And that was the one thing, and there could have been anything said, but that was the one thing that got me. So I got clean on February 10th, 1995. I went to treatment, like what some of us do. I begged for help. I couldn't get over the fact that I had to start all over. I couldn't. It took so long for me to erase the memory of what I was in this program and to be okay with just being this guy with a couple weeks, with a couple months. I'm in the end of the road again. Life sucks at the end of the road. It's shit in the end of the road. It's usually desperation. There's usually hopelessness. There's usually a ton of crap that comes with being in the end of the road, and I'm there again. Only this time I'm there with this old history, this old memory of what I was supposed to have been. And it's hard because I want to come to meetings and I want to be Bob or Joe. I don't want to be Mick Harvey. I don't want to hear, wow, what happened, dude? We missed you. I don't want to fucking answer what happened. I got high. We get high. I paid the price for getting high. There was a lot of consequences for getting high. And I'm going to say this again with some risk, but it came to a point 4 or 5 years after I got clean. I'm working my ass off this time. And it came to a point where I realized that first God please help never stopped. God got me when I got high. The relapse for me, was the best thing that ever happened in my recovery. Best thing. Because I would not be the man I am today had it not been for that. If I'm not paying that consequence, I'm not doing the kind of work that I do today, every day, like a monster. I don't want to get high again. So my life is about vigilance. I lived with that hole. If you're new, get okay with that hole. Recovery is an inside job, not an outside job. It's okay if you want to look nice and you haven't for a long time. You should. Right? But don't not pay the electric bill so you can buy a new pair of fucking shoes to go to the NA dance. It just don't make no kind of sense. Don't do something with somebody that you ain't sure about. Just because you're yearning to fill that hole with something that ain't going to last. And it'll never get better. Or you'll always have the hole. It'll always stay empty. So I tell my guys, you want to fill the hole, the first thing we do is focus on the guy that comes up at the meeting picking up the one day. Help somebody. There's no better way to fill the hole, to get some immediate self-esteem and some immediate self-worth than showing one small act of kindness. Damn it, somebody did it for you. If you're not doing it for somebody, you're a shoplifter.
You're a drive-by shoplifter up in this thing we do. Pay attention. Every meeting just about does clean time. If you've got 30 days, you've got something to give to somebody with one day. I'll tell you that the person with one day is going to relate to you with a week or two or a month way more than they're going to with that guy with 30 years. They're going to look at that guy with 30 years and say, get the fuck out of here. But the person with 30 days, they're going to go, wait a minute, 30 days? How? You were in jail? Nope. Just going to meetings. How'd you do that? So the new guy with one day and the guy with 2 days or a week or 30 days, they connect. They're helping each other. The guy with 30 days got a reason for being. Got to find a reason for being in here. We got plenty of opportunity at my home group. I'm the coffee guy. The coffee guy don't get high. And I get pissed when they're making the coffee because I'm running late. Because they're robbing me of my joy. They don't understand. What do you mean your joy? Ah, this is my way of giving back to something. To somebody. I don't care if you like the coffee or not. I'm really no coffee expert. Shit. Find something, some way. You'll fill that hole. There's another way. I'm going to take a risk. They used to tell us right out of the gate, they weren't sensitive to this God thing 30 years ago. They would tell you that if you're not praying, you're not staying. It was the truth. Get on your knees. I remember 30 years old being told to get on my knees, and I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I can't do that. And I remember going into the bedroom and making sure everybody was downstairs. And I'd shut the bedroom door and I'd hurry up and get on my knees because I didn't want anybody to see me on my knees praying because of some bullshit pride and some bullshit ego. And then later on I found out that there was a ton of shame attached to my relationship with God, or the one that I was trying to have. And that was on me. It wasn't on God, because God loves me. He's all forgiving all the time. I don't give a shit what it is. And I believe that. And guess how I got to believe that? Right here. Don't go to church. You guys taught me that. So you could pray and you could fill the void. You could help somebody. You could do something here. You could pray and the void starts to fill and you start to get a little self-esteem. And you start to get a little self-worth. And when you get a little self-esteem, a little self-worth, you really stop some of them bullshit behaviors. Because with a little self-worth and a little self-esteem, you might look at that knucklehead that last week looked pretty good. And all of a sudden, with a little self-esteem and a little self-worth, what the fuck was I thinking? So, I'm going to say something, you know, I'm going to end with a little thing that I think about often. It's about prayer. And, let me back up. If you were out using, and whatever your drug was, I don't care, whatever your drug was, you find somebody very close to you in your neighborhood that would set up shop and invite you over, and you could have all you wanted for free. Free. Free whatever. And he would have piles of it. So there was free in abundance. And we would go with a dance. First time, you might be a little timid. He says, you say, you always here? Yeah. Come back tomorrow. Shit, come back tonight. Now, I'm going back with a garbage bag and take some. And it's free. And it's in abundance. Every time I take a scoop, another scoop appears. It's unbelievable. I want to set up a fucking tent. I ain't leaving. I'm staying close to this thing, right? Because it's free and it's abundant. And he's always there, and he doesn't lie. He tells you, remember when they say, I'll be there in an hour, and you're out there for 3 hours in the fucking rain? Fuck, where's he at? And then you start getting pissed, and you're going to pistol whip this son of a bitch when he gets there. And then he shows up, and you go, and he goes, I'm sorry, I'm late. And you go, that's cool, man, no problem. We're good. But this dude's always there. He says he's there 24/7. He's there. You get to rely on him. You get all you want of everything you want and as much as you want. And he's always there and he doesn't lie. And it goes on and on and on. And guess what? Same deal with prayer. Don't want to shock you, but God is always there for Mick Harvey. In abundance for Mick Harvey. Always. Always faithful. Loving. Third step says, in the care of. Shit, I'm telling you, I'm in the care of. I can't believe that I realized what kind of care that was. And that Narcotics Anonymous gave me that kind of care through a loving and understanding and patient and forgiving and graceful God. Because boy, would I be a wild piece of shit if I didn't have that. And you can have it too. It didn't just come to me. It's for everybody. Thank you.